morning. Good morning, good morning. This is Abe Proctor. You're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM. This is Talk Radio, and welcome to our last show of 2005. So, we're going to do it a little differently today. A recurring theme that I hear from you guys who call me up, who write me emails, who write us messages here at the station is that there's just too much talking on talk radio. Too much damn talking. And that Joe and I should just shut up and listen to you callers speak more often. So today you're going to get that opportunity. But I have to say in the coming year, I'm really not going to take your advice to heart, and I'm going to continue to impose arbitrary standards on how much of me you hear and how much of you hear. Because, you know, that's just the way it's going to be. So, but today, though, I want to hear what's on your mind. It's the last show of the year. We're heading into a new year. There's been more hope for progressives in this last year, I think, than at any other time since the presidency was stolen in the year 2000. So I want to talk about the year that has gone by. I want to talk about the year to come. I've got some wishes that I'd like to see come true during this next year, and I would like to hear the same from you guys. What do you want to hear have happen this year? What would you like to see? Who would you not like to see anymore or hear anymore? So the number to call is 503-231-8187. Again, you're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. A couple of items, though, before we get going. There was an election in Iraq recently. Proponents of the invasion and the occupation have been beating their chests and insisting that this is evidence, finally, that the intentions of the United States were benign in invading this non-aggressive country and in instituting a subsequent illegal occupation. That really all we were after in the end was spreading freedom wherever we go. So this begs a number of questions, as I mentioned before on this radio program. The first of which is, can any election that occurs under the shadow of foreign occupation be considered legitimate by the residents of an occupied country? And I don't think it's too much of a stretch to say no. As long as there's United States troops in Iraq, as long as law and order is being enforced at the barrel of a gun, then any election that takes place is not going to be accepted by a significant portion of the populace. And indeed, an article in the Washington Post last Friday, the 23rd, reads as follows. A coalition of more than 60 political parties threatened Thursday to boycott Iraq's next parliament and warned of a surge in violence if new nationwide elections were not held. The group led by top Sunni Arab parties and the secular coalition led by former interim Prime Minister Iyad Alawi, who was our boy, by the way, issued a statement denouncing last Thursday's elections as fraudulent and listing demands they said must be met before they would participate in the new legislature. Otherwise, quote, we will not have any other choice but to boycott the political process and the coming parliament, said the statement. This would lead to more struggle and bloody violence and threat to the Iraqi entity and its people. The Iraqi entity, that's what we went to there to establish, my friends, an entity. Shiite Muslim religious parties that dominate the current government won by far the largest share of votes, according to preliminary results released this week by the Independent Electoral Commission of Iraq. But more than 1,500 complaints have been made, including 39 deemed serious enough to affect results, election officials have said. So, apparently they're having American-style elections in Iraq. So we'll see how that plays out. I'm going to go out on a limb and say no election, no government that takes place under a foreign occupation in Iraq is going to be deemed legitimate by Iraqis. As long as we're there, it's going to be a mess. Until we get out, it's going to be nothing but more messes. All right. 231-8187 is the number to call. My New Year's wishes. Very first on the list, I want to talk about the Democrats. Now, there's been a lot of talk about the Democrats on this radio program, most of it anti. I personally haven't been a Democrat for quite some time, and I don't plan to be in the foreseeable future. Many of you have sounded a repeating theme in speaking with Joe and I on this program that the only way out of the current political morass in which we find ourselves is to cultivate and grow a third party at the grassroots level and watch it bloom into national significance. I think that's true. But as I've said many times on this show, insofar as immediate action is concerned, the Democrats have to be our instrument. And let's face it, to date, they've been a pretty dull, blunt instrument. I think it goes without saying that we would not be in half the pickle we're in had the Democrats actually acted like an opposition party. And this goes back before September 11th. If the Democrats had actually acted like an opposition party, if they had actually acted like the party who's supposed to support the interests of working Americans, of middle and lower class Americans, of everybody except the privileged and the Bible beating that are represented by the GOP, then we wouldn't be in the predicament we're in. Everybody remembers that scene from the beginning of Fahrenheit 9/11 when all those African-American lawmakers in the House were challenging the results of the election in Florida and crying out for one Democratic senator to stand with them. And, of course, nobody did. Nobody did. And that election was allowed to be stolen. And the rest, of course, is history. So this spinelessness that became endemic throughout the so-called opposition party has been used, of course, to browbeat opposition candidates from John Kerry in 2004 to various candidates for the House and for the Senate. And even recently, as Congress debated renewal of the Patriot Act, the president came out and used this lack of spine against the Democrats, saying, well, the Democrats need to explain why they thought the Patriot Act was worth voting for in the days after September 11th, but not again now. And, of course, the answer is, and any honest Democrat would come forward and say this, but I don't think they're going to. The answer, is, of course, was, well, Mr. President, you see our spines collectively turned to liquid, ran out of our bodies, and pooled on the floor of the House and the Senate, and we haven't got them back since. The reason we voted for the Patriot Act right after September 11th is we were terrified of being called wussies, so we went around acting like wussies. And now that's no way for an opposition party to behave. So my wish in 2006 is for the Democrats to grow a collective set of spines. Spines and stones, that's what I want for the Democrats. It's time to start acting like an opposition party. It is time to present a unified front against the creeping fascism espoused by the people in charge now. I'm talking about, even though, for example, even though the Republicans have the numbers in the Senate, it's time for the Democrats to unanimously, as a block, oppose judicial nominees, oppose legislation, everything. So that anything that passes from here on out, anybody who's confirmed from here on out, is confirmed on a complete party line vote. So that the Democrats, come election time, or come any time when they need to actually believe in their own integrity, can stand up and say, I didn't vote to confirm that guy. I didn't vote to pass that legislation. In fact, nobody in my party in the Senate did. And we're proud of it because we are Americans and we're going to resist these people with our last breath. That's what we need from an opposition party, especially at a time like this in history. Can you imagine right now if a viable alternative was being advanced by the Democratic Party? If there were some coherent leadership, if there were some charismatic personages willing to step forward and advance their principles rather than worry about their prospect for re-election, if there's somebody who said, I don't care, damn it, whether or not this costs me my job, I am not going to capitulate to these people. And there are some individual Democrats out there who are doing it, and we have to give credit where credit is due. Cynthia McKinney from Georgia, Dennis Kucinich from Ohio, Maxine Waters from California, Barbara Lee from California, Russ Feingold, Senator from Wisconsin. They're out there. But we need the party, and let's face it, progressives, they must be our instrument now, however distasteful you might find that prospect. We need the party to coalesce and start acting like a true, loyal opposition. We can take some lessons from the Brits as far as this goes. So that's my first New Year's wish. Let's start hearing yours. 231-8187 is the number to call. Let's go to the phones. Who do we have, Elliot? James, good morning. Hello.
Good morning, Abe.
Hey, how you doing?
Happy New Year.
Same to you.
Hey, you know, Abe, the Republicans are the ones who are beating back the creeping fascism that is coming from the left.
Uh-huh.
That is the reality. You're living in a make-believe fantasy world. The movement, the progressive movement, is an extension of the movement which started with the Bolsheviks. And it moved into the Nazi Party, and now it is here, and you call yourselves progressives. And we Republicans, we the people whose philosophy founded this nation, we the people who believe that individual liberty and freedom against the tyranny of a minority needs to be fought back. And that's what we are doing. I also have one other thing I'd like to say is I was listening to Lars Larson the other day, and a clinical psychologist called in and said the entire progressive movement was made up of people who were narcissistic people. And I wanted you to comment on that.
Well, it's absolutely true, James. As a matter of fact, I have several full-length mirrors here in the studio with me, and I do nothing but admire myself as I speak over the airwaves to you. As far as the rest of your historical comparisons, well, yeah, I have to agree with you, too. You know, the creeping fascism that that arose out of the Bolshevik movement and continued into the Nazi Party, you're absolutely true. In fact, I'm sure nobody with any knowledge of history would claim that the Nazis and the Bolsheviks actually fought each other in the Second World War. I'm sure nobody's out there claiming that. And you're right. You're right. It is the GOP, James, who's defending America against the creeping advance of socialism. It's the GOP that's opposing torture. It's the GOP that's opposing detaining American citizens without trial or without charging them with a crime. It's the GOP, clearly, who's opposing the invasion of non-belligerent countries and their illegal occupation. It's clearly the GOP that's protecting the sanctity of the electoral system. It's clearly the GOP that's beating back the legacy of bigotry and racism in this country. You're right. What would we be without the Republicans, James? Bearing the torch of freedom and liberty forward into a new century. Thank God for the GOP and good conservatives like you, James, and thank you for listening.
It's about time you got it.
All right. Who's next, Elliot? Before we go to Ruth, Happy New Year, James. Ruth, you're next. Good morning.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay, yeah, here's what I want. I don't want to wish for it. It's, I want to get some different energy or a certain energy on cable or cable, television. I want to get out there, programming, whatever, done by, older women. I guess women 60s and above. From different walks of life, mm-hmm. and maybe and different races. And I want to get out there about women talking about motherhood, the way motherhood should be, healthy motherhood, healthy birthing, and also things like about paganism or goddess worship, I don't know, things that have to do with female or woman's wisdom, whatever. And I don't want it done by the professionals or elitists or egomaniacs. I want it done by I don't know what to how to say it. Everyday woman, older woman, and that. So I want to see a regular information or program on cable or cable television. And that's what I want. I don't want to. No, I'm beyond wishing for. I want a reality. Okay. Thanks for listening.
Well, thanks for calling, Ruth. You know, there's quite a bit of programming on KABU in that vein. Melody and Ani host a talk radio show, I think, Friday mornings here on KABU. That is, I think, pretty much made to order for you, Ruth. But if you want to see something different, then I would come down to the station and volunteer and start doing what you can to influence programming here. That's the nice thing about stations like this one. Gordon, you're up next on Cable. Good morning.
Good morning. What a way to start out the morning listening to a real complete JA. I just don't understand the mentality of these right-wingers. I mean...
Well, he's right, man. We're all narcissists and fascists.
I just... You know, and he's probably one of the people that tells you that the media is left-wing. I mean, if you follow the money, you can go towards the people that are putting out the media. They're all left. They're all right-wing. You got, you know, GE owning NBC. You've got, you know, Murdoch owning Fox. These are all Republicans that have been giving $1.6 million or more to the presidency. Who's in control of the media and dumbing down of the society? I just... Obviously, there's the repercussions of dumbing down society right there as we speak. The guy just reminds me of my wife's right-wing father that listens to Fox News for 20 hours a day. Had no idea that any of the bills went through into the Senate and Congress last week. But so we're all out of our minds. But I just don't understand the mentality. As far as that lady, you know, if you want to make a difference, you got to step up to the plate.
Yeah, that's true.
This is a big baseball game, if you want to put it. And if you're not going to get up off the bench, then you don't deserve to play or have any really anything to say about it. You know, wanting and needing are two different things. If you put one in one hand and you put one in the other, one's going to fill up a lot sooner, but nothing's going to get done. So if this lady wants to make a difference, there's WFTV in Oregon City. You've got Milwaukee Television that has no programming. They're looking for live people all day long. They're looking for people to come put out shows in Milwaukee Television. You got Portland Community Media, and you got Mount Hood Media. So, really, it's up to the individual to make a difference.
So the opportunities are out there, you say?
Oh, they're out there. I mean, Milwaukee, I'll give you an example. I shoot a show. You were on it. It's called Brain Stew.
Mm-hmm.
I'm airing out of Milwaukee 5 times a day. That's 5 hours a day, 30 days a week, 30 days a month. So that's because there's no programming coming out of there. So if this lady, which I have a great idea, if she's willing to give me a call, I'm looking for a woman to do a show. And if you want to, you can go to brainstewtv@yahoo.com. And I'm actually looking for a host, a woman that will come in and host a show of whatever she wants to talk about, what kind of things she wants to deal with. But I'm willing to host a show and put that kind of stuff on the air because we need more female energy. And it's all out there. So if people are interested, give me an email and brainstewtv@yahoo.com. And I'll be glad to produce a show out of Milwaukee or Portland Community Media and have women, you know. So other than that, happy holidays to you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
And so I came in late, so I just heard that J.A. talking on the phone. God, I don't know where he lives, under a rock or something. But congratulations. Happy holidays. And if anybody's interested, give me a caller, and I'll be glad to put somebody on a television show.
Right on, Gordon. Thanks for the call, man. Well, there it is, Ruth. Send an email to brainstewtv@yahoo.com. And any of you other listeners out there who want an opportunity to be on television and spew your fascist, narcissistic bile, now's your opportunity. Something Gordon just said reminded me of something I wanted to talk about today. He wished us a happy holidays. So I assume that all of you out there are loyal soldiers in the war against Christmas, and you've been doing your best to stamp it out. And I'm sure you've been raiding your neighbors, ripping down their Christmas trees and their all their other symbols, because as Bill O'Reilly claims, Christians are an oppressed minority and liberals are trying to stamp out Christmas. I knew I did my part, so I hope you all did your part as well. My next wish for the new year is for no black people to be shot by the Portland police. This is a sore that continues to fester in our city. And the police department is taking steps to remedy the situation. But as many African Americans in Portland have continued to say, nothing is really going to change until Portland police officers begin to more deeply understand the people they serve and protect. So, I want to see no African American Portlanders shot by the police this year. Actually, nobody at all shot by the police this year. And actually, I'd like nobody in Portland to shoot each other this year, okay? So that's it for the new year. No bullets flying in Portland. I don't think that's too much to ask to you. 503-231-8187 is the number to call. Elliot, do you have anybody on the phone for me? Ellen, good morning.
Hi.
Hi.
What I would like to see happen is there to be more cohesive community making on the local level. I'd like, I think the internet is really amazing and there's a lot of voices being heard, but I'd like us to also do a lot of organizing work, a lot more organizing work on the local level. I mean, one thing you can say about the Republican right-wing massive takeover is one of the ways they did it was to organize themselves very tightly, and even though I think that they used fear and control to do that, they did it, and we could learn from that. I mean, I don't want to use fear and control to create a new community, but I would like for us to do a lot of personal work on the community level amongst ourselves to start building a world that we want to see. And it's really hard. It's hard work. I've been involved in many activist groups in the last few years, and I know a lot of people came together that are very diverse thinking and ways of life to try to stop the war, and at first it was an amazing energy, and later it began to break down because we didn't have good communication between each other. I didn't see a lot of respect for different ways of thinking, and I saw basically that we really didn't know how to talk to each other, and I would like to see that. I've been interested in that thinking and organizing for a couple of years now, and I've looked at communities that do it really well, like communities in Venezuela and Argentina, communities that use spokes councils and allow women's voices and minority voices, and that agree to speak to each other with respect and to come to not just forced consensus, but actually helping each other to understand a better way of living together. And I'd like to see that happen in 2006. I think that real personal hard work needs to happen.
All right. Hear, hear. Ellen, I think you're absolutely correct. The GOP has come out on top now because they are highly focused, they're highly driven, and they're highly organized. They have a very controlled, very tight set of methods for getting their message out to the people. Their corporate owners control large swaths of the commercial media. They stay on message. They stay focused. They know how to beat on their opponents. And they know how to repeat slogans until they sink into people's brains, regardless of whether they're factual or not. But all this has been achieved through a very sophisticated series of organizations. So how do we oppose that? Just as Ellen said, from the bottom up, we organize at a community level, at a neighborhood level, at a municipal level. We start forming organizations. We start reforming our own existing political organizations into entities that hear the voices of women, of the underrepresented. And we start spreading our message that way. We encourage people to use their everyday choices to advance the causes they believe in. Where do you put your money as a consumer? How does that choice you make, all those series of small choices you make with your money over the course of the day, over the course of the week, what sort of consequences do those choices have, both positive and negative? If you change those choices just a little bit, can you help to collectively nudge things in a different direction? These are the things we need to think about, and these are the sort of ideas that we can promulgate with small-scale grassroots organization, which in turn will build itself at higher and higher levels. This is what I was talking about earlier when I talked about building third-party opposition from the ground up. And Ellen, as Ellen said, that's how it begins. We were originally going to have Melanie Sloan from Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington on the show today, but unfortunately she had to cancel. Melanie is a regular visitor with us on this show every month. So we're going to have to wait till the end of January to hear Melanie. That's too bad because there has been some breaking news in the in the whole Daisy Patch of scandals that sprouted up all over Washington, all the big neon lights that are pointing at GOP corruption in that town and all over the nation. But we'll talk about that another time. Who do we have on cell phone, Elliot? Oh, nobody on cell phone right now. All right, well, I'll go to my next New Year's wish on my list here. This past year, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, has brought more hope to progressives than at any other time since President Bush first assumed his office. We've seen the president's approval ratings dip down into the 30% range. They've nudged back up to somewhere in the low 40s right now. But as anybody who watches political numbers will tell you, that's not a very strong position for the president to be in. He's seen members of his own party in Congress begin to oppose his propositions. He has been seemingly caught in a number of public contradictions where he'll say one thing and other members of his administration will say another. The torture situation is the most egregious example of this. President emphatically insisting that we don't torture. The United States does not torture its captured enemies. While the vice president simultaneously lobbies for the CIA to be able to retain the right to torture our captured enemies. So we've begun to see what was once a very organized, very polished, very on-message administration begin to wobble, begin to worry about covering its own backside, beginning to worry about its support, its base of support eroding drastically. We now see close to two-thirds of Americans now opposing the war and occupation in Iraq. A majority believes that the administration misled us into this war. There was nearly across-the-board opposition to the president's plan to revamp Social Security. That happened early in the year. You remember that? The president's bamboozle-palooza tour, going around the country telling seniors how they're better off without this progressive institution that's been around since the days of their grandparents. So where this administration once seemed unassailable, they're bit by bit beginning to be exposed as the criminals that they are. So I'd like to see that continue. And in that same vein, I want to see the wave of indictments that suddenly blossomed in Washington to continue. Tom Lay's been indicted. Jack Abramoff, the Uber lobbyist, has been indicted. There, of course, have been now famous grand jury proceedings in the Valerie Plame affair. Prosecutor Fitzgerald is convening a new grand jury. Scooter Libby was indicted as a result of the first part of that procedure. And I want to see it keep going. Karl Rove, Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, everybody involved in this dirty little war. And maybe even the president himself. So that's another thing I'd like to see in this next year. For the current trend of public opinion against the administration and its policies to continue. So give me a call, 503-231-8187 is the number to call. My name is Abe Proctor. This is KBOO 90.7 FM. As I just mentioned, we're not going to have Melanie Sloan with us today. Unfortunately, she was unable to join us. So she'll be back next month. I've been going through my list of wishes for the new year. I'm asking you listeners to call in and let me know what you'd like to see happen in the new year. Next on my list is for the United States to begin a deliberate withdrawal from Iraq. I'd like to see American soldiers there gradually replaced by international forces, preferably wearing the blue helmets of the United Nations. The only problem with this plan is that such a force doesn't currently exist. But as I mentioned before on the show, this is the perfect opportunity to create such an entity. I think it's time that the international community maintain a standing military force for use in those situations which clearly cry out for military interventionism. Now, I know most of you progressives out there have an inherent pacifist streak, and I share that pacifist streak. And I tend to balk at any mention of the application of military force, regardless of the situation. I think it's best to exhaust all other options before turning to that one. But I think even us progressives can agree or we progressives can agree, that there are certain situations that call for military intervention. The prevention of genocide, perhaps the supervision of fair elections in a nation that is emerging from the shadow of dictatorship, for example. And it's about time, I think, we created that sort of force. If we had this sort of standing international army right now, I don't think we'd be facing the sort of situation we're seeing in Iraq right now. But then again, if we had that sort of faith in international institutions, we wouldn't have invaded Iraq to begin with. So I want us to see us beginning to withdraw from that situation. In many ways, it's a terrible catch-22 in Iraq. It's a terrible situation that will degrade if we stay. It will degrade if we leave. But in the end, it's better not to have the blood on our hands. And it's better to try and shift the burden of this situation, even though it's a mess of our own making. And we should continue to bear the financial burden of that mistake, I might add. It's time to transfer the burden of that mistake to an international body, to an international administration. Because at least as important as what's actually happening there is the perception of what's happening there. And the fact is that things are not going to get better until the occupying army of the United States withdraws. That is a fact. No election that's held will be perceived as legitimate. No armed forces that are created will be seen as legitimate. No police forces that are trained will be seen as legitimate. So it's time to get out, one way or another. It's a painful choice. It's a painful process. But it's time. We don't need to worry about peace with honor. We don't need to worry about saving face. All the face that we had to lose has been lost. So let's just get out and let these people truly get around to the task of self-government, whatever form that might take. If the people of Iraq elect to choose for themselves a Shiite theocracy, then so be it. If self-determination is really what trumps all other things, if democracy is really what we're about, then we need to let that happen regardless of whatever form it may take. All right, 231-8187 is the number to call. Who do we have, Elliot? Paul, good morning.
Good morning, Abe. How are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm great. It's kind of fun to call in at the end of the year. I sure want to thank you for all the work you've done this year.
Well, thanks.
My wish for next year would be that there would be more of you on the radio, actually. You mentioned how, the Democrats are kind of feeling more hopeful lately, and it's largely because of the work of people like you. But I don't think anybody does it the way you do. You just like what you just finished working over very clearly stated group of ideas about what needs to be done. You know, there are a lot of new things happening in the progressive movement, like Al Franken and Ed Schultz, but they don't clearly state very clear, obvious objectives. And when you talk to other people, now I'm a lifelong Republican, but of course they left me in the dust long ago. I just can't have anything to do with them. But
good for you.
Everybody I know, when you talk to them, they understand what's reasonable. And like the one female caller you had, you know, we have to work in our own communities. We have to build from the community. And then James that called in, that was wonderful this morning. This really shows that what we need to do is in our communities we need to reinforce actual knowledge and information and develop direction. But what's really needed is the news that we can't argue with that makes sense. And that's what we're not getting in our daily world. And I wish there were more people like you for next year to be doing that.
Well, thank you, Paul. I appreciate your kind words.
Thank you.
And, keep listening.
Okie doke.
All right. So more of me on the radio in the new year. You know, Paul's a wise man. Anybody else on the telephone right now? James. Is this the same James?
This is James here.
James, good morning.
How are you this morning?
I'm well. How are you?
Real good. I think that last guy wanted to ask you out.
It could be.
Okay. I've been thinking about, I'd like to see a palace coup of the Democrats, for starters.
You'd like to see what? I'm sorry?
A palace coup.
A palace coup?
Yeah, because, I mean, the Democrats, when you mentioned the loyal opposition earlier, I'm sitting here, that's what they are. They're loyal. The dollars that control the Democratic Party keeps them in kind of puppet mode and, you know, kind of Republican light. I'd like to see us try to overthrow the Democrats. I mean, I don't think anything starts happening until the Democrats, you know, get a little shoved to the left.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that statement.
And I don't know if this is possible, but can through the initiative process, can states call for the impeachment of a president?
No, only the House of Representatives can call for the impeachment of the president.
Can states call for constitutional conventions?
That's a very good question. I think the answer is probably yes.
I mean, because we have a constitutional crisis if the president refuses to follow the laws.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, I don't know the protocol for calling a constitutional convention. If anybody out there knows and can tell us, give us a call and let us know. Go ahead,
anyway,
James.
I'm just for overthrowing the Democrats first.
Overthrowing the Democrats first.
Okay.
All right, hey, thanks for the call. There's a lot of merit in what James is saying here. I think the Democrats do need to be nudged to the left. For a long time, I think really since the Carter administration, the Democrats and leftists in general have been running scared of accusations that they are running scared. They're afraid of being called soft on defense. They're afraid of being called soft on crime. They're afraid of being out-toughed at the ballot box by their opponents. And I think this has been to the great detriment of not only the party. When it comes right down to it, I don't really care about the Democratic Party except insofar as it can serve as opposition to the GOP at the moment. But this has been to the great detriment of not only the Democratic Party, but to the progressive movement in general. Let's face it, there was a time when being a Democrat meant something. Being a Democrat meant you were ardently in favor of a strong labor movement, that you were an environmentalist, that you believed in civil rights, that you believed in equal rights for women, a whole slate of progressive ideals that we all still share, but aren't being espoused as vociferously by the Democratic Party as they should be. Now, going back to the Carter administration, as I recalled, and going back even further to Nixon, I think when Nixon won his first term in the late 60s, a decision was made within the ranks of the GOP that a Democrat didn't need to ever again occupy the White House. And I think they stumbled around then on their recipe for defeating the Democrats. We all remember President Reagan's opposition to President Carter, that he was weak, that he was unwilling to stand up to the Soviets, that he told Americans that they had to sacrifice. Imagine that, that they had to embrace a certain frugality, that they had to actively seek a lifestyle that wasn't as openly consumptive. Weak, 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 milk-toasty leftist ideas that were very, very successfully assaulted by Ronald Reagan in his campaign for his first term in 1980. And there was also the hanky-panky on behalf of his running mate, George H.W. Bush, former head of the Central Intelligence Agency, who flew to Paris during the election season of 1980 and arranged with Iranian authorities to have the American hostages in Iran released on the day of President Reagan's inauguration. And the fact that President Carter was unable to secure their release, perhaps more than any other factor, worked against his chances for re-election. And, of course, much political hay was made by the Republicans about the alleged weakness of liberals and leftists in general. And, of course, the Democrats flinched and have been flinching ever since. Look at the opposition to Reagan's successor. Again, the self-same George H.W. Bush. Michael Dukakis, yeah, satisfactory candidate. Perhaps with a little fewer rhetorical squeals than we'd like to see, perhaps with a little less charisma than we'd like to see, but he was successfully browbeaten by the Willie Horton ad, a despicable if brilliant piece of propaganda, successfully browbeaten as being weak, as being soft on crime, as being soft on defense, so much so that, remember that, he felt the need to pose riding in a tank, and that ridiculous picture was taken of him wearing that combat helmet, his head sticking out of the hatch of a tank, and that was ruthlessly exploited by the Republicans. And it wasn't until the very end of that campaign that Dukakis said, you know what, I am a liberal. I am a liberal. I am a proud liberal in the tradition of Franklin Roosevelt, Lyndon Johnson, and John Kennedy. And when he started saying that, when he started openly embracing his progressivism, when he decided not to be stymied by the application of the word liberal as a label, he started to do better. He started to close the gap between himself and his opponent, but of course it was too little too late. And after that point, the Democratic Party was hijacked by the Democratic Leadership Council, and those of you who listen to this radio show know how I feel about those people. The milquetoasty, spineless, centrist Democratic coalition that thought it was more important to ally themselves with corporate donor interests than it was to advance the cause of activist, liberal, progressive government that the party had been espousing since the Great Depression. And it is though that self-same Democratic Leadership Council that believes somehow that it was its own policies that catapulted Bill Clinton into office. When, of course, Bill Clinton was catapulted into office by two things. First, his own towering intellectual and political skills. And this can't be underestimated or overestimated. I never use those words quite right. I apologize for that. Bill Clinton will remain a gigantic figure in American politics. Rarely will we see a politician with his intellectual and rhetorical gifts. But it was those gifts and the fact that Ross Perot garnered a significant percentage of the vote in 1992 that catapulted him into office. It wasn't the centrist policies of the Democratic Leadership Council. It wasn't battling for the mushy middle of American politics that led to those victories. It was Bill Clinton himself. And since that time, we've had two candidates who've lost, and I use lost in quotation marks, in large part due to their that same sort of attempt to capture the middle of the electorate. Al Gore, of course, actually won his election in 2000, and there's a lot of evidence that suggests that John Kerry won his election in 2004. But at the same time, both of these candidates ran from their own progressive heritage and their own progressive beliefs, watered down their message in the mistaken belief that if they acted too liberal, they were going to lose. So they're afraid of being called wusses, so they acted like wusses, and surprise, surprise, they lost. So James is right. The Democrats need to be kicked to the left if they're going to be any sort of instrument for progressivism, and I still believe that they can. Actually, I still hope that at one day soon that I can look at the prospect of registering as a Democrat and not get sick to my stomach. That's what I really hope. The party has a proud legacy, and it's about time they re-embraced it. We saw a little bit of that with Howard Dean. Howard Dean actually showed us a way, showed us a third way, a way that avoids the trap of the DLC watering down its message to gain corporate donor dollars. Howard Dean showed us that you can raise a hell of a lot of money with small donations from a whole lot of people. And if we can follow this model as progressives, then we can gain a lot of ground in the coming year. So good call, James. Who do we have on the phone? Scott, you're up next.
Hey there.
Hey there.
Are you a Green or independent?
I'm a Green.
Okay. Well, I guess you're already hooked up with the party structure. But
yeah, more or less. I tend to not be real involved in party politics.
Yeah. You're talking about national things that you and I and those listening have very little ability to change, like the DLC.
Yeah, that's right.
We can do things locally,
Yeah, we can do things locally, and all those local actions around the country can move towards a critical mass
exactly
that will influence
right.
the DLC.
We need to work in our backyard
right.
first, and that's actually where we can have effect, and then there's a cumulative effect. So for those of the folks out there that aren't active, they need to get active with the Democratic Party, and for that matter, the Green Party. And they need to get active within the parties to set the policies they want to see, what they call planks or platforms.
Right.
And frankly, it's an open secret, and it's how the conservative right-wing religious Republicans were able to take over the party structure of the Republican Party is the precinct committee persons.
Mm-hmm.
So right here in Oregon right now, at least for the two main parties, there are huge numbers of vacant seats. Now, I don't have the exact numbers, but in Multnomah County, don't quote me, but there's somewhere about 1,500 precinct committee person seats. And I believe more than 50% are vacant. Each one of those has a vote within the internal Democratic and Republican parties to help set policy on anything from health care to the environment.
So you're talking about literally writing the correct sorts of policy planks into the party platform by actually becoming a precinct committee person.
Right. And well, the idea, and
it makes sense to me.
There's no pay, but it's easy as filling out a single form, one page, and most parties automatically are glad to fill a vacant position, so they don't even scrutinize you. If you step up, you're in. So for people that are already Democrats, chances are where you live, your neighborhood, is not represented by anyone. So step up to the plate. And as far as the Green Party, I don't think you folks have precinct committee persons.
I don't know the answer to that.
I don't think you're officially recognized under law to have that kind of a system, but the two big parties do. But I think that's about, instead of complaining, I'm not saying you particularly, but instead
right.
of complaining about what we can't do, it's what we actually can do. And I wanted to segue that into, you know, you had your caller, James, the second one,
mm-hmm.
said he was a Republican.
Mm-hmm.
And he referred to Ed Schultz as a progressive. That's problem number one. What we're finding in the Democratic Party, from my personal experience, is a lot of disaffected, not a lot, but a handful of disaffected Republicans are coming into the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
But they're bringing with them their Republican ideology, but they're angry at Bush, but they still feel the same way. But they just don't want to be a Republican anymore. In the midst of a Democratic Party, you're mentioning DLC, that should be put under pressure to become more progressive. At the same time, disaffected Republicans going to the Democratic fold are pulling it more to the right or to the center.
Yeah, you're right.
And so that is just the fact. But folks right here in Oregon and listening to you and I on KBOO can actually get involved, at least in the Democratic Party, by actually getting a vote in the party politics itself by becoming a precinct committee person. And I'll leave you with this. If you call the Multnomah County Elections Office and give them your address, they can tell you, one, who are the precinct committee persons that represent your party in your area. They're your local contact people. And if there's vacancies, and if there's a vacancy, you can fill out a form, and you can become a precinct committee person in no time.
Excellent, Scott.
Well, you take care.
Yeah, you as well. You know, that's the simplest, best solution I think we've heard so far. Why not have a hand in actually crafting a progressive party platform? Now, I can't speak for the Greens and what sort of organization they have and how they create their platform, but I imagine there's some sort of similar mechanism exists within the Green Party. But that's a brilliant idea. Become a precinct committee person. Apparently there's vacancies all over the place. So as Scott just instructed us, call your county election office and find out. Might as well grab the bull by the horns that way. Pear, you're up next. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Abe.
Hey.
I have to take issue with your praise of the UN.
Praise of the UN?
Right. You're talking about uh-huh. putting the UN in Iraq, you know, to supervise elections and all that.
Uh-huh.
You know, in a way, it's a good, yeah, it's better than what we've got now, but the warning is, look at Haiti. The UN is in Haiti right now trying to supposedly to supervise elections, which have been postponed for about the fourth or maybe the fifth time. And it's just a catastrophe down there. The UN is not doing its job, and I'm not sure why. I suspect it's because basically the United States, France, and Canada cooked up the forced removal of President Aristide.
Yeah.
And they're trying to push in, you know, they're kind of candid. For once, the U.S. and France are allied, and I guess maybe the U.N. is going along with it, or feel even people like President Lula of Brazil are going along with this for ulterior reasons, I think. You know, Brazil wants to be on the Security Council, and this is their way of, you know, getting brownie points, you know. Brown nose points, actually. But anyway, it's, you know, if you look at the situation in Haiti, I think you'll kind of wonder what's going on with the UN.
So you're saying the UN is too often the creature of its powerful member states.
Something
it's
like
more
that.
Powerful member states.
Well, they're sure making them. They're not doing anything worthwhile in Haiti. They're killing people who are Aristide supporters. They're letting these armed militias who overthrew Aristide roam around. I mean, in fact, as far as elections go, the best candidate, well, aside from Aristide himself, who's in exile in Africa, the other possible candidate would be this Father Jean Just, who is in prison, not charged with anything. His health is deteriorating. Also, the former prime minister, Yvonne Neptune, is in prison on a hunger strike. Either one of these people could be a candidate and represent the people, but they're not allowed to run.
Hmm.
So basically, we have a real farce shaping up. The election's been postponed. This is supposedly it's going to be held in January, supposedly. I don't know. It's just another thing they're doing is that in the poor sections of Port-au-Prince, the there are no election offices. There are no places where people can register. So the people, the poor people are not being registered, while they have lots of people in the rich suburbs are being registered.
So they literally lack the electoral infrastructure they need to hold an election.
Something like that, yeah. Yeah, yeah, check it out. I mean, it's you know, I used to think the UN is sort of a panacea in some ways, but boy, in Haiti, they're not doing the job.
Wow. Hey, well, thanks for the call, Pierre.
You bet.
Well, yeah, that's, of course, a very valid point. The United Nations, while in theory and in concept, might appear to be a cure-all, for situations like the one in Haiti, like the one in Iraq. Yeah, the fact remains that structurally the UN has been crafted so that it favors the more powerful member nations, those nations really with a permanent seat on the Security Council and with a permanent veto of any Security Council-approved resolutions. So some structural reform to the United Nations is necessary. Also, the powerful member states of the United Nations, in order for it to have any sort of viability at all, the more powerful member states need to start ceding a little bit of their sovereignty. And if you're a GOP member of the listening audience right now, there is steam coming out of your ears, and you're sitting back and your mouth hanging open, you're going, I can't believe he's advocating ceding some of the United States sovereignty to an international body. But the fact remains, that's how it's going to happen. We've elected not to do this. We've elected not to participate in the International Criminal Court. We've elected not to participate in the Kyoto Global Warming Protocols. We've elected not to participate in the International Chemical Weapons Convention. And we have exercised our veto in the UN Security Council in such a way as to protect our economic interests around the globe. So my underlying point here is, in order for an international governing body to be viable, it's not necessary that each member state loses its identity as a nation state, loses its ability to supervise its own affairs, but they all have to agree to abide by decisions that are made in common by the international governing body, even when those decisions may act counter to a particular national interest. And that's a step the United States has been unwilling to take. We've been unwilling to voluntarily give up our place at the top of the hill. Now, it's my position that that's something we need to do. And I'm sure there are many out there, even in this audience, who think I'm absolutely insane to suggest that. If so, call me up and tell me why. But it's my opinion that we need to start more fully participating in these various international bodies and thereby contribute to a more concrete form of international law and thereby more fully participate in the global community of nations and thus advance the cause of underprivileged human beings around the world, which is what this all comes down to in the end, I think. So, call me up, tell me I'm crazy and I'm a traitor for advocating a small dissolution of American sovereignty, but there it is. That's what I think. Who else have we got on the phone today? Larry, good morning.
Good morning, Ed.
Hey.
Self-determination by Iraq or for Iraq? Okay, self-determination, that just speaks of self-governing by Iraq.
Right.
Not as long as there are two barrels of oil there. Do you agree with me?
Yeah, I completely agree with you.
Giving up a part of our sovereignty. Imperialists do not submit.
No, they don't.
They don't.
Yeah, you're right.
I tried to write this down. I was going to write down King of the Hill, but it came out King of Hell.
An ironic slip of the pen there.
Ironic slip of the of the pencil here. Yeah, the imperialists. The preacher, I have a spy in the church I used to go to. He says, George Bush and all the wealthy people are going to hell. It's not whether you're a Republican or a Democrat. We bounce back and forth like a ping pong ball. It's our value package, and I appreciate your value package, Abe.
Well, thank you.
You're drilling for the truth, and I appreciate that.
Well, I'm glad you're listening, and thanks for your comments.
Have a good holiday, and a Merry Christmas, and a wonderful coming year, okay?
Yeah, same to you, Larry.
Thank you.
I love it when people call up and compliment me on my package. At 9 on Between the Covers, Elizabeth Fournier, author of Spook, Science Tackles the Afterlife. That's here on KBOO 90.7 FM at 9 a.m. At 9:30 on Words and Pictures, it's a panel discussion called True Portland Comics. I don't know if that means comedians or comic books. I guess you'll have to tune in and find out. At 10, Stephanie Potter interviews Lucy Liu of the Freedom Project, which supports the transition of prisoners into peacemakers to build safe communities founded on effective connection. On 10:30 on stage and studio, Willamette Radio Theater presents A Christmas Carol. And at 11, it's Democracy Now!, one of my very favorite radio programs. One more word on the subject of sovereignty. There is a grim and growing irony about the sovereignty of not only the United States, but of every nation state on the globe. As I mentioned many times on this radio program, I think what we're seeing here in the big economic picture is a phase shift on a scale akin to the transition from feudalism to mercantile capitalism, on the same scale as the transition from mercantile capitalism to industrial capitalism. What we're seeing now is a transition of the nation state as the ultimate repository of political and economic power to the transnational global corporation as the ultimate repository of political and economic power. And central to this discourse, of course, is the notion of sovereignty. Conservatives in this country have long railed against any action, any decision, any membership in any body that compromises in any way the sovereignty of the United States. You've heard them before. Get the United States out of the United Nations. No foreigner should control United States policy. Nothing we do should inhibit in any way our ability to guide our own destiny militarily, economically, politically, what have you. But at the same time that conservatives are espousing this line of thinking, we have systematically been giving away our sovereignty, not to organizations like the UN, not to organizations like the International Criminal Court or the International Chemical Weapons Convention, but to organizations like the World Trade Organization, with agreements like the North American Free Trade Agreement, the Central American Free Trade Agreement. These organizations are resulting in a compromise of American sovereignty, not the United Nations. For example, under both the World Trade Organization and the Central American Free Trade Agreement, a corporation who finds its profitability inhibited by any sort of local regulation, any corporation that finds its profitability impeded by any sort of local regulation, be it an environmental statute, a labor law, what have you, can now challenge these regulations in an extrajudicial tribunal convened by and staffed by members of the trade organization. So, for example, if we have, I'm just making this up here, we've got a law here in Oregon that says you can't dump toxic sludge into the river. Well, if having to dispose of toxic sludge in some other way impacts the profitability of Globocorp, then Globocorp can convene an extrajudicial tribunal that doesn't operate under the auspices of the United States of America, the state of Oregon, Multnomah County, the city of Portland, any government entity at any level in the United States. They can form this extrajudicial tribunal, challenge that law, and have it abolished. That, my friends, is a loss of sovereignty. A loss of sovereignty not to a benign international governmental body, but to a trade organization comprised of corporations who are able to straddle international borders, instantly move capital from one point on the globe to another, and who can count on taxpayer-funded military protection for their exploits. That is the shift we're seeing right now on a global level. That is how our sovereignty is being compromised. Oh, I have a correction here. I announced earlier that Elizabeth Fournier was the author of Spook, Science Tackles the Afterlife. She is not. She is going to interview the author of Spook. I'm not sure who that is, but Elizabeth Fournier will be our interviewer and not our featured author at 9 o'clock. That's following this radio program. So who do we have next, Elliot? Oh, phone lines are open. 231-8187 is the number to call. So I'd have to add to my list after that discussion we just had, my list of wishes for the new year, that the United States withdraw from the recently created free trade zones in North and Central America, and that we demand that the World Trade Organization not have the ability to override local environmental labor regulations. We ask that sovereignty remain with the people of whatever nation we happen to be talking about. That people of any region in the world be able to successfully legislate in their own interests and the interests of their ecosystem and not have to fear that their actions will be overrided by an international body of corporate traders. Who do we have, Elliot? Marianne, good morning.
Hi. Yeah. You know, I just wanted to comment that it really is in our own long-term economic interest to cooperate with places like the UN. It's only in our short-term economic interest that we don't do it.
Oh, I couldn't agree more.
Yeah. Okay, that was my comment.
That was your comment. Hey, well, yeah. Thanks, Marianne. It's short and sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you listening, and have a good new year.
Yeah. Well, I will say one other thing. I think you and Joanne Bowman are the only two talk show hosts on cable that really do listen to callers.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Not too much. But when Joe's with you, it's different.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Marianne.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Marianne just drew a very, very important distinction about short-term interest versus long-term interest. Right now, everything we've seen this country do since the year 2000 has been in the short-term interest of a very small class of GOP donors. And right now, support of those short-term interests are undermining the long-term interests, not only of we as Americans, but we as human beings and members of a biosphere that is a closed system and whose inherent homeostatic balances are being undone by the actions of industrial society. Those are the long-term interests we need to look at. Not whether or not Halliburton can be awarded a multi-billion dollar no-bid contract in Iraq. Not whether the president is able to enrich the very wealthiest in this country by cutting their taxes. right now, the appeasement of short-term interests is mortgaging our future, not only on a national level, but on a global level, not only politically, but economically and environmentally as well. So, Marianne, you're very right, and I'm going to have to add that to my list as well. Time to look towards the long term. All right, who do we have next, Elliot? Greg, good morning.
Good morning. I'm reading a book called Power Down, and they mentioned something, the Carter Doctrine.
The Carter Doctrine.
Now, it mentioned that it was about securing energy using military force. Is that correct? Do you know more about that?
You know, I don't.
And I wonder, does that make it like law, or does it make it, so we have to pursue this course?
No, it doesn't. I've heard something about, I've just heard this mentioned in passing, that the Carter administration formulated a plan to secure petroleum resources by force. Or they started thinking along those lines looking forward. I can't confirm it, and I really can't speak any more about it because I don't know. But in answer to your second question, a given doctrine enacted by a given president will often serve as precedent for chief executives that follow, but it's not something that's grafted in stone. For example, the Bush Doctrine of Preventive War may very well and hopefully will be disallowed by any president we may have in the future. So the answer is no. Unless there's a law enacted that dictates how we're going to behave in a certain political or economic sphere, then no. A certain doctrine attributed to a certain president is not binding unless it's actually passed into law.
Oh, that's good to hear.
Yeah.
All right, well, everyone, keep energy efficiency up and renewable energies on your mind. And we'll see you the next year.
Hey, thanks Greg.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Anybody else right now? Elliot? Okay. Phones are open. 231-8187 is the number to call. I've been, for those of you just tuning in, moving down my list of wishes for the new year, and I'm also soliciting the same sorts of wishes from you guys. Next on my list, I would like to see the death penalty abolished in the year 2006. And it's not going to happen, but I'm going to wish for it anyway. It's a barbaric practice. It brings closure to nobody. And to those people who advocate it as a means of emotional closure for the bereaved, I would ask them to look very, very carefully at their own emotional state and ask themselves if the death of another human being is appropriate or necessary to achieve some sort of emotional closure. I say that it isn't, and that every time we the people put another person to death in this country, that person's blood is on all of our hands. Frankly, I'm tired of washing blood from my hands as a result of this policy. You know, right now, if we wanted to join the European Union, we would be disallowed because we still carry out this practice. We are the only Western nation who still executes its prisoners, and it's high time this came to an end. We talked about this a few weeks ago when Tukey Williams was looking for clemency from Governor Schwarzenegger in California, and unfortunately that didn't happen. But that was a very high-profile affair there while it lasted, and let's hope that that gives us the momentum we need to finally do away with this practice and join the civilized nations of the world. Who do we have, Elliot? Roger, good morning.
Hi. At risk of lowering the intellectual tone of your program, because I really like
it. Oh, risk away.
Last week, there was a discussion about the use of the word president in this particular instance, a few choices came up, like resident and usurper, and someone else said shrub. And I was reading in the paper how the Transport Security Agency, whatever, TSA, wanted to come up with a group called the Viper. You know, they like these acronyms. And they couldn't actually get it even right, because Viper stands for Visible Intermodal Protection and Response, which is VIPAR. But anyway, I thought shrub is a good acronym. And we should think of good words to put in the for the letters shrub. And resident and usurper fit right in the middle there, as does Bush at the end of the word. So we have SH at the beginning. And the first one that comes to mind, you can't actually get it put in the air because the S is a problem. But there's lots of other possibilities, like selected honky or secretive hubristic.
Silly hick.
Selected huckster. you know, all kinds of problems. So I thought maybe we should have a little contest to come up with the best acronym with the word.
Best acronym for shrub.
So I'll leave it at that. And I think your show is just wonderful, and I agree with you on just about everything, especially the thing about the UN. I think the UN's a wonderful idea. It's just not quite working the way it was intended with people like Bolton at the top. Anyway, thank you. Keep going, and I'm going to hang up right now.
All right. Thank you, Roger. Yeah, if anybody comes up with a clever acronym to fit the letters spelling shrub, that's S-H-R-U-B out there for the spelling challenged, call me up and let me know. So, moving back to my list of New Year's wishes, I would like to begin rebuilding the name and reputation of the United States of America. And for some of you out there, this might not be very important, and some of you may argue quite correctly that the name and reputation of the United States of America were squandered a long time ago, but never quite so visibly as in the days since the terror attacks of September the 11th, 2001. Regardless of our foibles, regardless of how much we may have flexed our political and economic muscle around the globe, regardless of how many dictatorial regimes we may have propped up so that we could have access to cheap labor pools and raw materials, nevertheless, there is a certain mystique, a certain reverence towards the United States of America that is simply no longer there. We've become an international pariah. And I would like to see that restored, if for no other reason than it's better to have one's country respected than feared. And I think most of you would agree with that. So we've teetered in this country for the past few years on the brink of failure. And when I say that, I mean in terms of the United States as the great experiment. At the time our Constitution was formed, or drafted, at the time our Republic was formed, we were virtually alone on the globe in terms of what we were trying to accomplish as a self-governing people. Now, we have failed in many, many ways to live up to our own language, to the ideals in our own Constitution. But there's been a gradual march forward. We've expanded the franchise with each generation. We've given the right to vote to formerly enslaved members of the populace, to women, to people young enough to be conscripted into the armed forces. We have seen a gradual march toward enlightenment, not only in this country, but in those countries that followed our lead afterward. And that's what I mean when I say the great experiment. An experiment in a new way of doing things at a time when it simply couldn't be found anywhere else. And that legacy is one to be proud of. And as I mentioned on this program last week, those of us who are so angry right now, who are so upset at the depredations of this administration, who are so ashamed at what our country has come to represent all over the globe, we do it not because we hate the United States of America, as the other side would accuse us of doing. No, we do it because we love the United States of America. That when it comes right down to it, we are patriots, all of us progressives. We all want our country to be a place that we can be proud of. We want the historical legacy that this country and its constitution represent to be one we can be proud of. We want the great experiment to succeed. We want to bring equality and justice to people of every creed, race, color, what have you. That's what we want to see. That's the progress that we want to see. We don't want to dominate the world militarily. We don't want to exploit the labor and raw materials of the world. We want to move towards an America and a humanity that more fully live up to the ideals in our own Constitution. A more just world, a more fair world, a cleaner, more sustainable world, a more peaceful world, a more educated world. And that begins by working to rebuild the name and reputation of the United States of America, to undo the damage that this administration has done. And it's not going to be easy, but isn't a better time to start than right now? Telephones, Elliot. We have anybody right now? LJ, good morning.
Well, hi, Abe. How are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm fantastic. Thank you very, very much. Another day in paradise, sir.
Indeed.
Okay. I would like to talk about the assault on our personal freedoms And there are guarantees in the Bill of Rights, which is the preamble to the Constitution, for people who don't know, that gives us certain rights, like the right to assemble, the right to exercise free speech, the right for people to peacefully assemble, and the right to petition the government for a redress of grievances.
Yes.
All right? Our rights are being violated daily. And I'm having a hard time understanding where the President of the United States of America is supposed to uphold the Constitution that's in his oath of office, yet he violates that every single day. And I'll take my answer up here. Thank you.
Yeah, as Elliot just whispered in my ear, right on, LJ. You're absolutely correct. Our rights are being violated every day. In the fog of confusion and fear that settled over this country after the terrorist attacks of 2001, this administration moved forward with any number of nefarious agendas and moved to implement a quasi-police state in which resistance to their agenda could be easily cracked down upon. You are absolutely correct. This president was sworn to uphold the rights granted to us in the Constitution, and he has failed to do so on a number of counts, and even admitted as much about a week and a half ago. The New York Times ran with an article that it had sat on for quite some time, and that's going to go on my list of things for the new year. Let's find a new newspaper of record. Screw the New York Times, I say. When the New York Times released its article a few weeks ago about the president spying upon Americans, he subsequently went on television and admitted it, and then not only admitted it, but went on to say that he'd do it again and would continue to do it. And that the only problem that needed to be discussed was the fact that somebody in the government let it slip to the New York Times that it was going on. And they should have just shut up and allowed the president to go forward with infringing upon the constitutionally guaranteed freedoms that Americans enjoy. Now, we talked about this domestic spying program at length last week, and I'm glad that somebody brought it up again today. Because as John Dean, he of the Nixon administration, he was White House counsel during Watergate, has gone on to write a book called Worse Than Watergate about this administration. Said last week that this might be the first time in American history that a president has committed an impeachable offense, and then gone on to admit it and defend it in public. Right now, there's nothing stopping this president from being impeached other than the fact that his party controls the House of Representatives. And that leads me back to another item on my list for next year, and that is for the 2000 elections to go heavily, heavily against the Republican Party. Say what you will about the Democrats, but it's time to catapult a whole bunch of them into office, especially in the House. And there's, of course, every House member goes up for election every 2 years. Now, it may be that the electoral system has been sufficiently shanghaied by the GOP and their corporate cronies, why I should put it the other way, by the corporate world and their GOP cronies, that this might not be obtainable. But it's my opinion and my hope that if public sentiment goes overwhelmingly against the Republicans next year, that we can win back a majority in both houses of Congress, most importantly, in the House of Representatives. And if that happens, then members of this administration should start looking for asylum in different countries. Because not only are they traitors to the Constitution and to the ideals of the United States of America, but I think quite a legitimate case can be made that they've committed crimes against humanity as well. So enough trampling of the Constitution from those who are sworn to uphold it. It's time to vote the bastards out. Who do we have, Elliot? Julie, good morning.
Good morning. I have something you were just touching on when you mentioned the corporate world just now, but I was thinking about personhood and mm-hmm. who should be a person in this country, and I thought perhaps maybe not corporations, just people, as far as who's allowed free speech and who's
so
allowed...
You're referring to the fact that the law recognizes corporations as people.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, that needs to change.
And And then along with that, then the who can donate to their representative and who can donate to the people's representatives and senators and politicians.
Yeah, you're right again. Who gives money to whom mm-hmm. is what's driving the political agenda right now.
And even the whole lobbying world. So yeah. Those are some thoughts.
Well, thank you very much, Julie. I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe what one of our previous callers suggested, and I forget who it was, a constitutional convention might very well be what we need right now. Time to sit down and evaluate the Constitution as it pertains to life in the information age. Directly address questions like, is money really equivalent to speech when it's donated to political campaigns? Is that really something we should allow? Perhaps a constitutional convention is the answer. I'm going to have to look into how exactly we call one. Not that I doubt, I think it's a very likely occurrence in the next year or any of the forthcoming years, but it might be one peaceable, rational, enlightened way out of the quandary in which we find ourselves. I'm not talking about tearing up the Constitution and writing a new one, but sitting down and evaluating it in the context of just what is achievable today with the technology at our disposal, and when that technology is monopolized by those with a whole lot of money. So that pretty much brings me to the... Oh, I have one more item on my list, and this is a biggie. I wrote it in capital letters, and I underlined it. And that is, I wish for no terrorist attacks in this country during the next year. And is that a cynical wish? Yes, it is. I want to avoid terrorist attacks not only because innocent people deserve to continue to live their lives in whatever way they see fit and not be blown to bits by whatever attack might be coming down the pike, but also because if we're attacked sometime between now and the elections this coming fall, you can expect more of the same fear-mongering, bullying, and gamesmanship that you saw from the Republicans after the September 11th attacks. That's the one thing that could undo all the progress we've made collectively in refuting what it is they're trying to do to us. So I want to see us stay free from terrorist attacks, not only because it will prevent loss of life, but because it will prevent these guys from solidifying their grip on our constitutional order. And that, I'm afraid, brings us to the end of today's show. One more call, Elliot's asking me. Esteban, one more call.
Okay, hey.
Hey.
Along with the Constitutional Convention, something to be considered, as you've already spoken, get money out of politics, mm-hmm. do away with the lobbyists. I mean, open the halls to where there's some voice being able to go through the halls instead of just money. The other thing is, we're still dealing with the same limited number of representatives that we had 225 years ago when the population of this country was almost nil, as opposed to 285 million people today. Something that we need to consider is more representation, more voices out there to be put into it instead of the same stale old people.
Unless I'm mistaken, Esteban, I believe the size of the House has grown as the population has grown.
Oh, okay. It still doesn't seem big enough.
yeah, that's definitely true.
But no, agreed. And with electronic the way it is now, you send something to Washington and it goes into committee, and by the time it gets back with a solution, the problem's already gotten so bad it's fixed itself or gone away, and it isn't relevant because it takes so much time. We could have these things put out on a regular basis and have people vote once a month or once every 6 months and have it a holiday.
Hey, Esteban, I'm sorry, man, but I got to cut you off. We're out of time. I appreciate you listening. I appreciate your call. Thank you, everyone who's listened to us this year. I'm hoping this next year will be a good one. I've got more hope, I have to say, now than I had in a long time. And thank you all for listening, and I'll talk to you in the new year. Bye-bye.